But first today, to some of the aftermath of that heartbreaking story from the US, where Major Nidal Malik Hassan has been charged with 13 murders at the Fort Hood Army Base. Now, there are obvious casualties here, like the unsuspecting dead and wounded, plus their families, and maybe also a less obvious casualty, pluralism in the US armed forces. The US military has been actively recruiting American Muslims since September the 11th. Indeed, Muslims have a long history of distinguished service as GIs, going back to World War I. But is it possible that these latest wars are offering acute challenges to serving Muslims? Well, one man who has counselled Muslims conflicted about enlisting in the armed forces is Dr. Khalid Abu El Fadl. He's a political scientist in his original credential, but he also has long training in Islamic jurisprudence and is now Professor of Law at the University of California. He's well known as an early writer on the distinctions between so-called moderate and extremist Islam, with books like The Great Theft, Wrestling Islam from the Extremists. And it's my great pleasure to welcome him. Dr. Fadl, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning.
Dr. Fadl, I wonder what you're reading into this incident. Some are arguing that the emerging portrait of Major Hassan's life in the military casts light on some of the struggles and frustrations felt by other Muslims in the services. Is that how you're seeing it, and is that the conversation inside the American Muslim community?
I think that this fellow is an extreme, extreme case. What is truly extreme about him is that in his presentation, when he's done presentations to the army about Muslims in the military, and he presented what I would even call the perspective sort of an orientalist, an outsider to the Islamic tradition. He described himself as someone who doesn't care about Islamic teachings and so on, and talked about what the fanatics believe, but then he does this completely unexpected act. I think it's an outlier. I really don't think that this man is representative of a larger phenomenon.
But it is so tricky. I wonder whether, I mean, all the indications are that he prayed very actively. You know, he was very conscientious with his prayers. He was particularly looking for a particular type of wife, that he was very troubled by the deaths of his parents, and so on and so forth. Now, I wonder whether there's much conversation about the patterns in this man's behaviour, and whether there was a tipping point where there were some danger signs given off as to whether he was moving into another arena that was a long way from Orientalism.
In my experience, those who've had moral issues, not with Muslims serving in the military, because as you noted, there are thousands of Muslims in the military and they're who serve with distinction, and some of the most famous names in the American military are of Middle Eastern origin, but is the fact that he has chosen this rather treacherous and criminal act of betrayal of shooting his friends in the back. Mm. Most Muslims who have a moral issue, like normal people who have moral issues, they ask the question of whether this has become now an unjust war because the United States is not performing the role of the liberator but the oppressor, and whether that means they need to do the brave thing and become conscientious objectors, even if it means having to go to prison or having to pay back the money they owe or having to, but I have never encountered someone who wants to solve this moral tension by act that is clearly immoral and clearly un-Islamic.
There has been quite a lot of evidence that he was becoming increasingly and visibly troubled by the prospect of deployment to Afghanistan, that he was seeking to get out of the military, and that this is not an easy thing to do prior to deployment. So there were signs. I just wonder whether you've had people come to you in that situation and whether the military listens to them sufficiently.
Well, you know, there are different situations. There are situations where you can withdraw from the military and basically owe them the money and pay it back. There are situations, as in his case, where you've committed yourself by contract to perform certain duties. And I've had cases where, as conscientious objectors, the military keeps them out of combat situations, and they perform roles in logistics and supportive roles, or in medical corps, or something to that effect. And if worst comes worse, I know of a couple of people who ultimately were court-martialed and served a period of prison sentence, whether 6 months or a year. But in all of these situations, their concern had been whether they are not going to be performing a humanitarian mission, but they're going to be engaging in killing innocent people. Many of the people who've had a problem were people who this was their second tour of duty rather than their first. So they were there, they had some traumatizing experience, and then they were loath to return again or repeat the tour of duty, which sometimes they have to do.
And of course, none of this applied to him.
None of this applied to him. And so these, and also part of the information that I've read about him is, for instance, is that he frequented strip clubs. I've read the presentation he made to military about Islamic law. And as an expert in Islamic law, I can tell you that his presentation is what I would expect an Islamophobe to make.
Really?
About Islam. Yeah, I mean, it's so...
So this is
so
a deeply, deeply, deeply confused, troubled man.
And I really think that is I've heard his father speak on TV. There's an aspect of him where he's constantly complaining about being picked on, but there are many people, Muslims, who served in the military, and they respond to being picked on by holding their head up high and finding a supportive niche. Often, I mean, to be quite blunt, the niche is found among African-Americans or Hispanic Muslims, other minorities that who are going through this process of winning their place in the American tapestry. But this type of reaction, I have no words for, and I really don't know how he came to the conclusion that his activity is going to lead him to a position of bliss with God.
I suppose it's at least possible that all of this, you say, the presentations he made were a ruse, and that he'd actually had become some form of jihadist. I mean, there's a lot of debate about how much he was involved with jihadists and how much he might have heard calls by people like Nasir al-Wahhashi for jihadists to go for soft targets. I mean, you know, have you considered that?
I mean, it's quite possible that it was a form of cover. It's even possible that going to strip clubs and so on was a form of cover. But the question here is not, I mean, I'll tell you that the first to oppose ridding the military of Muslims will be the Pentagon, will be the military, because I've done a lot of work with the military, and the Muslim recruits perform an essential variety of essential functions in avoiding combat situations, resolving all types of tensions and conflicts, and so on and so forth. So they play a key role. I do wonder whether military intelligence had it, if this guy was communicating with well-known fanatics or even reading their websites, I really do wonder why he was not forcefully deprived, and don't mean tortured or anything like that, but I mean questioned very strongly, and if he is not able to offer, he's not an intelligence officer, so if he's not able to offer a convincing responses, I would have expected that there would be some type of control. I mean, it's not a matter of Muslim, but it's a matter of if I will notice a white soldier who's frequenting the websites of white supremacists.
Sure.
Or if I find a black soldier who is starting to read the diaries of some militant radical black leader. So it's not a Muslim issue. It's just a matter of common sense and normal
due diligence.
Due diligence and protection.
Finally, Dr. Fadel, I noticed that some leading Muslims are criticizing the Muslim communities inside America for not dealing with returned officers and serving officers well enough. Is there a concern about people who join up because they want to be perceived as patriotic and very much part of America, particularly young people, who come home to be criticized by fellow Muslims and imams?
The reality is that you're dealing with a generational gap. They're usually, it's an issue of immigrants and the second generation or the third generation, in that the generation of my own children, my son, the United States is the only country they know, and they're thoroughly American, and they're eager to prove their patriotism. Of course, for immigrants who are quite often armchair political critics, their attitude is that you work, you make money, you save money, you take care of family members, and the less engaged you are in anything, the better. And yes, quite often there is sort of, well, why do you have to go look for trouble? Why are you putting yourself in situations of, in harm's way, and in situations where you might end up in a morally compromising situation? But at the same time, I know the Muslim veteran several Muslim veteran organizations in the United States, and they are very proud. It's not an exaggeration to say that they wear the flag on their sleeve, as well as Islam on their sleeve.
Look, that's been a very interesting overview, and your candor has been terrific. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
Dr. Khaled Abu El Fadel, F-A-D-L, Professor of Law at the University of California, and he's written a number of books. We'll have them on our website, but one is The Search for Beauty in Islam, a conference of the books, a Roman and Littleford publication, and the New York Times and Stratfor.com have been writing very interestingly on this, and we'll post those details on our website.